The Bill Myers Show podcast is sponsored by Clouser Drilling. They've been leading the way in Southern Oregon well drilling for over 50 years. Find out more about them at clouserdrilling.com.
Here's Bill Meyer.
Good morning. It is Pebble in Your Shoe Tuesday. If there's ever been a time for you to see something which has been irritating you, or you wanted to bring some greater attention to an issue in society, well, that's what I'm for this morning. 770-563-3770-KMED. And it always feels better once you remove the pebble of your from your shoe, rather, and perhaps even share the pebble amongst others. It may be make something get a little bit better. I wanted to share with you something which caused a kerfuffle. Is it a kerfuffle? Kerfuffle? Whatever it was, it made a lot of noise yesterday on the floor of the state legislature. When State Representative Dwayne Junker ended up talking about a book, which is in the Three Rivers School District. It's actually kind of a frenzy yesterday, really, because he read aloud from a book passage in a government school. Now, I took something from his video, and I kind of cleaned it up, but it's still a little raw, even when it's when it's edited. So I just wanted to let you know this, but this is how it went, and I think you'll be able to hear Representative Dwayne Junker loud and clear.
Last week, a mother in my district spoke at Three Rivers School Board meeting about the library book, The Haters. The book is currently in North Valley High School Library in Grants Pass. She had begun the process by contesting the book back in January. She met with the principal. Then the district reviewed the book to determine it would be removed or not. She was just notified that the district decided not to remove the book. Before I start reading this section on page 265, I want to highlight the rules on the floor. Forbidden profane and indecent language, but it's okay for children to use profane and indecent language in public schools because the book is provided to them in the library. From page 265, she guided me on my back and pulled on the bottom of my briefs. I pushed them over my knees and feet and was completely naked. And not hard at all. She straddled me and pulled her top off. Her breasts flopped out, and I heard more of them, saw them. She reached behind herself, kind of careful, took my not into one hand. Pretty soon, I couldn't really think about anything else, and pretty soon after that, I was hard. And she took her hand away and heard her open some little crinkling package, and I felt her put cool plastically middle of the condom snugly on the front of my like she was shrink-wrapping it. I felt her fingernails through the plastic like legs of crab fingernailing.
Excuse me, Representative. I need to interrupt you for just a moment. I see Representative Mannix. For what purpose are you in the privilege queue?
Point of personal privilege, objection to procedure.
Please state your objection, Representative.
I object to the representative's reading of improper matters.
And I'm
improper
sorry,
could you repeat
that for me one more time?
I think the representative's presentation is lascivious and obscene, and I object to it.
Thank you very much. The House will stand at ease for just a moment.
And so they debated this a little bit. So State Representative Kevin Mannix, by the way, a Republican, was concerned that State Representative Dwayne Junker was actually reading from a book that taxpayers paid for in the North Valley High School library. Now, there was more to this, but I think you can kind of get the general idea and the feeling of how this worked. And Representative David Gomberg, who was presiding over the floor proceedings yesterday, this according to the Oregonian, allowed Junker to continue speaking, reminding him that language being used here on the floor is not simply heard here on the floor, but it is also heard by everyone listening of all ages and of a variety of sensitivities. Junker continued to read the explicit passage aloud until he was once again stopped by Mannix. So Mannix stopped him again a little bit later, and then he didn't read any longer. Junker then, citing examples of teachers in Oregon sexually abusing children, and cited a 2019 report in which Oregon had the highest rate of sex offenders of all states. Meanwhile, he says, we continue to allow distribution of sexually explicit materials to children, which normalize such behaviors. There's an increasingly focus on the authorship of books rather than evaluating whether the content is appropriate for young readers. young readers. So there we go. Now, the note that that State Rep Yunker sent to me, as I ended up getting a link to this, he says, not everyone has social media, and the video on social media has been edited down to around 4 minutes. But I challenge Senate Bill 1098 on the House floor with a remonstrance because it had passed out of the Senate's Committee on Education this morning along party lines. This bill would take away the rights of parents to challenge school boards on pornographic books in school libraries. My goal today was to get the Democrats to admit that it was inappropriate to read the material from the book Haters, which is in the school library at North Valley High School. I also wanted to show that I believe Democrats are sexualizing our children and attempting to make this behavior acceptable. If you watch the long version of the video, you'll see that I was stopped the first time that I asked to come to the speaker's desk, where the speaker read the material I had. I left the speaker's desk and the discussion continued. When the House was called to order, I was allowed to continue. I was stopped the second time and a much longer discussion took place, during which the Democrats met in a corner and the Republicans met in the back of the room. When the room was called to order, you can see that the speaker changed his stance and asked me not to read from the book. But as you can see from the remarks and the events that took place, the book is not appropriate for the House floor, and it should not be appropriate for high school students. Do you agree with Representative Yunker, Representative Dwayne Yunker, that if you cannot read something on the floor of the House, the taxpayers should not be buying it for school students? What do you think? I think it's a reasonable question to pose on Pebble in Your Shoe Tuesday. 16 minutes after 6, 770-563-370-KMED. Whatever's on your mind, if you have something else you'd like to kick it around, we'll do that on the Bill Myers Show.
Is your health care important to you?
Supply, call for details. Internet and cell phone service not provided by Dish.
Hi, I'm Lisa with Kelly's Automotive Service, and I'm on KMED.
State Representative Dwayne Yunker causing a sensation, I guess would be one way of putting it, as he ends up reading from a smutty youth fiction story, which is in the North Valley High School, paid for by taxpayer funds. And they were all upset at him because he's reading this pretty raunchy section of the book, basically a kid's sex scene there, and talking about putting the condom on and wasn't this, and the breast flopped out and everything else. And like I said, I bleeped a couple parts of it and played, the beginning of it. Kevin Mannix then comes out there, wants it stopped because this is not, we shouldn't be doing this on the state legislature. But State Rep Yunker, obviously trying to make a point that if we're not allowed, if we can't read this in front of the state legislature, then why is the state legislature trying to stop parents? Now, see, this is the reason he was trying to oppose a bill that the Democrats are wanting the ability to stop parents from challenging books purchased by the taxpayers' money being put in the high school and school libraries. So that's why he read it. And of course, I imagine it was probably worse that he did that. He broke protocol. He wasn't following the rules there. But Francine, it's Pebble in Your Shoe Tuesday. I know you have one of your own, but what did you think about that particular little incident in which, it's really bad to read from the haters. It's worse to read from the haters than for the taxpayers to be forced to pay for the haters book being put in the library.
I think somebody else might have done this sometime back, too. It was more of a girl-on-girl scene out of a book. And it got the same response, like, oh, this is inappropriate, But
you see stuff like this going on all the time in school board meetings, right? In which parents will try to read these things. You can't read. Yeah, but you can. Yeah. But you can give it to the kids, right? That's all right.
To the kids.
Yeah.
Yet they'll take away other. They'll take other books out of the library, like, Mark Twain's. I think it was it the Tom Sawyer or the Huckleberry Finn book?
Adventures of Tom, because of the N-word, right?
N-word.
Yeah. At the same time, all those kids probably have the same N-word repeated again and again and again in their rap music.
They say it all the time. They go, hey, and blah, 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 I mean, they talk to each other that way. That's totally acceptable, but they can't let you have a good literature that actually taught something about race relations during a period of time, in the past. They're excellent books, and yet they're banned. So I don't know. I'm really glad he's pulling this up again, you know, this topic up again. I hope it keeps getting covered, but it needs to also be pointed out how they've taken other books away, and yet they whine like, oh, banning books, blah, 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 you know.
Uh-huh.
So,
well,
so anyway.
The one thing we have to remember, though, is that to have the taxpayers say we don't want to pay for this book is not the same as banning a book. No books have been banned. Anybody can go buy the book. The point is, though, is that our communist-controlled school system wishes to force the breakdown of culture, in my opinion. That's really what they're about, I think.
Yeah, bingo. That's it. It has nothing to do with reality.
All right. Now, you had an individual pebble you wanted to
discuss. I have
a
pebble. It's been bugging me, and I just keep not quite getting to the phone on Tuesday, so here it goes, okay? Every time I make a phone call for, you know, to have something taken care of over the phone, like whether it's over a purchase I've made or I'm ordering something or I want some information or it's for technical help or whatever, I get an email. Rate your experience.
Oh, yes. Hey, do you mind if I give you a real American salute? Because I didn't realize how much I get irritated with it, okay? Yeah, okay, so you get a real American because every time you do any kind of service, and then how many times do you get reminded? It's like I'm getting to the point where the few times that I'll buy something on Amazon, I don't want to do it because then I get hassled forever. Bill, please rate your purchase. Bill, rate your experience. Bill, rate this. Shut up! But anyway.
They have some, I can't remember which company it is, but they actually send you an email with a picture of the person telling you who they are, what their hobbies are, if they have children, where they live. And it's like, I don't want to know this person. I have, you know, stop. Just stop. I don't mind occasionally the ones on the phone where there's, you know, you have a choice. Would you fill out a brief survey and it's three things, you know, and it's just,
if they're just saying, did the person show up promptly? Did they treat you courteously? Yada, yada. I'm okay with a quick one. Yeah,
that's
fine.
And it's easy to opt out. You don't have something thrown into your email that you have to deal with deleting it and getting it again. It drives me crazy. I'm really, really sick of it. And I wish they would stop.
Do you feel better now?
God, Bill, thank you so much
for this opportunity. That's what it's about. See, I didn't want your head to plop off, okay? Thank you.
Okay.
All right. See, that's a great Pebble in Your Shoe Tuesday call. Thank you, Francine. Let me go to Tom. Hello, Tom. How are you this morning? Welcome to the show.
Well, I'm just kind of staggered, you know, listening to what you were reading there and so forth. And it just makes me wonder if our society now is too mentally ill to save itself. We have a governor up there. She's declaring a Kill Babies Day, a celebration. And
what was it? Happy Abortion Appreciation Day. That was Governor Kotek when she was getting together with the Planned Parenthood CEO and declaring it's March 10th. It's March 10th. Is now that home.
And then we have Alan Journay out there with his merry band of climate fanatics. We have people shooting up Tesla, distributorships and so forth and so on. And it just seems like the whole country is so mentally ill. I don't know if we can save ourselves. It's like no one's brain is working. And
do you think it is something where people's brains aren't working, or is it just where is this almost like a mass contagion stage of some sort that just has to work itself out, whether it's a Trump derangement or other kinds of derangement that we have going on? People definitely are wound a little bit tight. I'll give you that much.
With the Trump derangement syndrome, that's another part of this whole mental aspect of what's going on. But just it's like people are just everyone's wound up so tight, and I think a lot of it's the media. I don't know. Maybe it's part of the Wi-Fi business. There's so much microwave now that it's irritating everyone's nervous system and putting everyone on. How's that for a good?
That's an interesting theory. It might be better for a conspiracy theory Thursday, but I've never thought about anybody being excited by the Wi-Fi network in their home or their work or wherever they happen to be.
About
I don't know.
Road rage. What about road rage? Where do you think that's coming from? I just think I don't. Yeah, I can't prove it, but I think it hypes people up and makes them irritable when they're not even aware of being irritable. Then they explode.
I've thought about the road rage thing quite a bit, and I don't know if it's necessarily electronically induced. I think that there's a certain amount of on the road today. I think there's a subtle, or maybe not so subtle. Everything's always monitored. If you're not going through radar, you're going through picture intersections. You're doing this, and there's kind of a an overall
big brother.
Yeah, there's always that paternalistic thing, and I don't know if there's a certain amount of people in society that it's almost at the point where whatever you're serving up, we're going to reject it and express irritation from it. And that may be some of it. And, you know, for the longest time, going driving used to be, to me, one of the most relaxing things you could do, because it was one thing that you're kind of isolated in your own little bubble, and it was kind of a real freedom thing. I don't know if it is as much of that these days.
Exactly. I mean, it used to be, Sunday would roll around and the family go for a drive where it's not even planned. We're just going to drive down the road. And I remember a few of those Sunday drives back in the 50s. That's how far back I go. But it was like a sense of freedom. Oh, and then out driving around. Oh, there's the artichoke fields by Castrol. Let's buy a bag of artichokes for $5.
Yeah, and now it is everywhere. Okay, here comes the red light camera here. There's the red light van. Oh, there's the flashy sign on the road telling you how fast you're going. I don't know. Maybe I'm just going too far on that, but that sense of just being, maybe what we all have to do is just go drive out of Eastern Oregon where there's nobody, so that way we can regain some of that feeling. How about that,
Tom? It's a good question, but I've measured some of the Wi-Fi in some of these modern cars, and believe me, it's a flashing red. And
you're not going to drive a Tesla, will you? Right?
A 4,000-pound battery.
Got it right. Hey, Tom, I always appreciate the call. Thanks for that on Pebble and Your Shoe Tuesday. Let me grab another call here. Hi, good morning. Who's this?
Mr. Minor Dave.
Hey, Dave.
I have a pet peeve, and I have a feather in my cap.
Okay, give me a quick pet peeve. Sure.
In California, the poverty level is $339,900. Is where the poverty level is. And with my income, I'm 300% below, or roughly 300% below the poverty level.
Okay, so, and then that's a pebble? Sure, okay. What, and now what?
Yeah. Oh, then the feather in the cap is YouTube gave me a series of quizzes, and I aced them all, and I earned a badge saying, I sent you the JPEG.
Yeah, I saw that. They're giving you like a little award. I think they're giving you an award, Dave, because you're hanging out on the site all the time, and the more you hang out, the more money you're making for them. How about that?
Well, yeah, but they gave me a bunch of tattoos.
Okay, yeah, your phone's kind of cutting out on me a bit, though, so we might have to finish it another time, all right? It's 6:29 at KMED.
Nominations are open for this year's Bi-Coastal Media Best of Southern Oregon contest, presented by Dusty's Transmissions. Nominate and support your...
on Bullock Road in Medford.
You're hearing the Bill Myers Show on 106.3 KMED.
I mentioned how much I was looking forward to talking with Mark Seal and Nathan King, because they dig into one of my favorite movies of all time, and that is The Godfather. I'd mentioned that. And it's Leave the Gun, Take the Cannoli. Mark Seal, Nathan King, how you doing this morning? Welcome to the show. Great to have you on.
Good. How are you? Great to be here.
Hey, tell me
great
about
this. Thank you for having us.
Now, is this a podcast show? What is the deal? How can people get a hold of this first off before we dig into what you're doing there?
Yeah, it is a podcast, and it's available anywhere that you listen to your podcast, from the iHeart app or Spotify or Apple Podcasts.
All right. And what made you both decide to get into this, actually putting on a show like this on a continual basis here? What is it about The Godfather, besides the fact that I love it, has made it so iconic and worthy of your attention?
Well, Mark Seal, I wrote a book about the making of The Godfather called Leave the Gun, Take the Cannoli, the same title as the podcast, and it came out in 2021, and every time, it's like Al Pacino in Godfather 3. Every time I want to get out, they bring me back in. You know, it's like you can't escape this movie. It's like an obsession. It's become an obsession to me, as it is for a lot of people. In the afterword for the paperback that just came out, I mentioned this about, you know, people who love The Godfather really love The Godfather. I mean, we're like a group of fanatics, you know? And so we wanted to continue the research with this podcast, and I think it came off pretty well.
I'm kind of wondering if part of this, especially in a time in which arguably people feel out of control when it comes to law enforcement, or that the system doesn't have control of it. Even though they were outlaws, there was a set of rules or a code in mafia world. Would that be a fair assessment of what's going on, and why some people maybe kind of appreciate what was going on, even though we didn't necessarily like what they did? There was a code. You knew the rules. This is what happened. Any thoughts on that, gentlemen?
Well, there was. Like the key role, one of the key lines is, you know, it's business. It's not personal. It's, you know, things have to be done in the business world of these men and these women. And it's, you know, but it's not a personal thing. And there's all of these different rules to live by, I think, in The Godfather. Like, you know, Tom Hanks once said in the movie, you've got mail, you know, The Godfather is the I Ching. The Godfather is the answer to every question. You know, what are you going to pack for your vacation? Leave the gun, take the cannoli. I mean, you know, it's just like, it's like the set of rules to live by, in a way.
By the way, Mark and Nathan, for that matter, is that line something which was scripted, or is it so often you hear about something which somebody did it just for fun and or just on the spur of the moment? Was that actually in the script?
No, it wasn't in the script. So it was voiced by the great Richard Castellano at Clemenza after they shot Pauly Gatto, the turncoat, you know, in the car. And I don't know, they had gotten some cannolis at a bakery earlier that day, and Clemenza says, you know, after they shoot down Pauly Gatto, Clemenza just says off the cuff, Castellano, he wasn't scripted at all. He just says, leave the gun, take the cannoli. And he grabs the box with his fat hands by the strings, and there you go. It was a totally ad-lib line, and it kind of sums up everything, because the movie is not just about the gun. The movie is about the cannoli, the family. You know, the family is the key to the magic of The Godfather.
What I'm kind of wondering is that, could anybody, either of you, give me an example of something? I didn't realize that there was so much trouble that this movie almost didn't get made. What kind of pressure was being placed on either the filmmakers or Coppola or any of the other people? Maybe an example or two. A lot of folks don't know this.
Nathan, you take that one.
Well, the pressure was really coming from both ends, because on one side, the studio didn't see eye to eye with Coppola's vision at all, and so they didn't want them to film on location in New York City. They didn't want it to be a period movie. They wanted to do it in a city like St. Louis, where it would have been cheaper, and they wanted to do it in, you know, present day, which would have been then the 70s. And then on the other end, the pressure was coming from the underworld, shall we say, because by way of the Italian-American Civil Rights League, who sort of advocated for the positioning of Italian-Americans in American culture and avoiding stereotypes and all the stigmas that had developed, they didn't want this movie to get made, and they didn't want, you know, to get a bad reputation. So through the Teamsters Union and a bunch of other methods, they stonewalled the movie for a long time, until the filmmakers fortunately were able to broker a deal, and all they ended up having to do was eliminate the word mafia from the script, which only appeared one time. So it was a pretty simple solution, and in the end, they loved it.
In the end, didn't Italian Americans end up embracing that after being upset at first?
Yes, exactly. So many, In the beginning, they wanted Italian Americans for Italian American roles, and they got it in a big part, except for Marlon Brando and, of course, James Caan. But you can't imagine a different cast in this movie than the cast that's on the screen. And in the beginning, Francis Ford Coppola brought the cast that he envisioned to San Francisco, the cast that you see today. But the studio didn't like these cast members because they thought these were unknowns, which they were.
Oh.
And they ended up spending $450,000 to cast every bankable actor and actress for these roles.
And the other thing I'll say.
Uh-huh.
Oh, sorry, Mark. The other thing I'll say is that it's sort of silly that anyone looked askance at the movie being made, because look who was making it. I mean, Mario Puzo and Francis Ford Coppola. You don't really get anyone more Italian American than those two. So of course they were going to, come up with this dignified portrayal.
Yeah. Now, of course, the first two I thought were good. Last one, not. But still, leave the gun, take the cannoli. Mark Seal and Nathan King. It's everything The Godfather. And I look forward to finding out more about that. Gentlemen, I appreciate you taking a few moments, and we'll put all the information up about your podcast. Sounds like a lot of fun. Good stuff, okay? Thank you very much.
Thank you for having us.
639 at KMED. This is The Bill Myers Show.
Ready to upgrade your roof to a durable, sleek?
Call 833-SHARE-55. That's 833-SHARE-55. 833-SHARE-55.
This is News Talk 106.3 KMED, and you're waking up with the Bill Myers Show.
Happy to take your call on Pebble in Your Shoe Tuesday. Is anything on your mind? 770-5633, 770-KMED. Just a quick piece of news before I head to the phones. Epic Times reporting about the Social Security Administration recently announcing an update on its death records, indicating that there were mistakes, but the agency's numbers, the death numbers, were mostly accurate. Is that kind of like when we talked about the Summer of Love riots, in which they were mostly peaceful as the flames were burning behind the CNN reporter? You have to wonder about stuff like that, right? But anyway, in a March 16th statement, so this was Sunday, about 3 million deaths are reported to the Social Security Agency each year, and the records are highly accurate, SSA said. Of these millions of death reports received each year, less than 1/3 of 1% are erroneously reported deaths that need to be corrected. So anyway, in the address to a joint session of Congress on March 4th, Trump said that there were 3.47 million Social Security recipients aged 120 to 129 years old listed in the government databases. So I don't know if they necessarily fixed that. I think Social Security at this point does appear to be more concerned about false death reports than that there may be 120 to 129-year-olds still on the rolls or still within their database. It does seem a little bit odd. So I have a feeling we just have to take a wait-and-see attitude about this one. Speaking of President Trump, we are going to continue that conversation. I've been so irritated by the bag of bones, weaselly judge, in my opinion, the Obama appointee going after President Trump and saying, you're not allowed to deport these bloodthirsty killer types. Yeah, we can't do that. Yeah, we got to keep them here and do it at our expense, I suppose. But anyway, I'm going to talk with Mike O'Neill from the Landmark Legal Foundation. And I'd like to find out, and this is a serious question. This is what I'm always asking all my legal eagle friends that I end up having on the show here. What can be done about this activism? Because if you're at the point that nobody can do anything until everything gets run through the court, especially if you're a Republican president, then we don't have three co-equal branches of government. And that really concerns me. And we probably haven't had three co-equals for quite some time. Well, there really are four co-equal branches, I suppose. There's the administrative state, which is fighting back here, too. Hey, Cherry, how you doing this morning? Welcome. It's Pebble in Your Shoe Tuesday. What's on your mind, huh?
Well, I just wanted to say that I also am such a fan of The Godfather 1 and 2.
Yeah, I ended up talking to the podcast people, Leave the Gun, Take the Cannoli, a few minutes ago. And I didn't know there was something like that, but they never run out of material from the sounds of it.
Well, what I loved best, more than The Godfather or The Casino or any of that, or Goodfellas, which I, oh boy, The Sopranos, we have been watching that since 06, over and over.
Really?
About, you know, well, it's created by David Chase, about Tony Soprano and his family. In fact, they showcased a lot of the mob's family and their children, not just, you know, their hijinks out in the world. And I just, there's a line that Tony Soprano said after he got shot in the gut by his uncle, by mistake. His uncle was pretty out there. He was gone mentally, and he got shot by him, and he lived. And after he survived that, he told his shrink, which was really not done to have a shrink. But
that part always kind of rang weird to me, in which you're a mob boss and you got a shrink that knows practically everything going on with your family. That never rang true to me, but yeah, I'll digress. I'll let that go.
Well, but what I loved about what Tony said, he says, "Hey, I love life, but how come it has to be like a pair of socks?" You know? So I just thought it was such an amazing series, the best I think ever.
So you really liked it, huh?
My God.
I tried to get into The Sopranos, and for some reason, it just always kind of left me cold. I don't know why.
Oh,
I don't know why. You know how when you'll hear someone, it's like Game of Thrones. Everybody told me how great Game of Thrones.
Yes, I love that.
Now, I wonder, there must be two types of people in this world. There are the people who like Game of Thrones and The Sopranos, and people like me who... I just don't care. For some reason, I never could find a reason to care. I don't know why. I can't explain it. It just never hooked into me. Of course, I've never been much into that Viking dirty kind of lifestyle things. Those period pieces, anyway.
It's horrible. But you got to watch Mr. Brooks. That's with Kevin Costner, and it is one of the most sinister, mysterious movies I've seen in a long time. He was incredible, and that was a twist and turn of something I haven't seen in a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, you know, you're not going to get...
Well, okay, now, is someone being assassinated in Mr. Brooks?
No, not...
You see, if no one's getting assassinated, I don't care to watch. You know, unless someone's being assassinated, I don't know what that says about me, but...
It's gruesome. It's a gruesome movie, so you'll love it. And I was just amazed by Kevin Costner's acting ability. I'm not even a fan of his, but it was really good. And also Demi Moore was in it, and she, you know, I don't like her that much, but again, it was such a twisty, turny, and the ending was weird, you know.
Well, I'll tell you what. I'll take that as a recommendation. By the way, I did want to mention, you are skipping the later Bruce Willis movies, right? I know you're a big movie person.
Oh, I love him.
I love Bruce Willis, too. But you know, before his disorder ended up being diagnosed and talked about it, you could tell that he was just doing as many movies and putting as many movies in the pipeline as possible. And unfortunately, in that final year or two, every time you know, Linda and I would get so excited, be on Amazon Prime or a Netflix or something like that, and you look, oh, it's like, yo, Bruce Willis movie, because Bruce Willis was always one of those actors that made a bad movie, even a bad movie and bad material, a lot better. Because of his power, of what he was able to do. But in the end, when he was starting to fade, and now we know after the fact that he was fading, you know, at that time, you realize how many of those bad ones in that final year or two. Just please avoid them.
Well, that's why he got what he got. He got a stroke because of all of the exposure to those explosions and all of that stuff that he did. You know, I mean... He's an incredible, but he's a seal. I mean, amazing person. I miss him very, very much.
Everybody misses Bruce Willis. He made everything better as far as I'm concerned. Very sad what happened there. Cherry, thank you for the take. I don't know if you're going to get me into The Sopranos, but, you know, I love The Godfather, but for some reason, Sopranos never worked for me, all right? But God bless you. Right? Or God love you, right? We got to say God love you after St. Patrick's Day. God loves you. Hi, good morning. This is Bill, Pebble in Your Shoe Tuesday, and anything else on your mind? Who's this?
Hey, Bill, this is Vicky from the Applegate.
Hi, Vicky. How's life in the Applegate? Are the rivers going down? Are the creeks looking better today? I hope so.
Oh, my gosh. Sterling Creek is raging. And
still.
Usually it's like a trickle, so there's a lot of water moving.
Fortunately, it does tend to go down pretty quickly after a while, you know, and we're going to get kind of a dry day before the rain kicks up again tomorrow afternoon, so you get a little bit of a reprieve between now and then.
Yeah. Well, it's really funny and kind of psychic of you to be talking about Game of Thrones, because I just watched the whole series, all 8 seasons, and if you put past the Viking kind of ruthlessness of it, it really, to me, pertains to what's going on today. Like, the Lannisters are total Democrats. That's what represents the Democrats. And in the end, they end up all dying. I mean, they're everything is destroyed. Every ally they have, every scheme, and everything that they try and get away with, all the lies, everything gets exposed at the end. And if you take that approach when you watch it, rather than just see a bunch of like gore and death, which I like, honestly, I wouldn't do any of it.
So you're thinking that I never gave it enough of a chance then, right?
No, and if you ever decide to watch it, Bill, honestly, just go into it with our politics today. It's astounding. I mean, I haven't watched it.
So look at it through the Democrat versus Republican political lens with the Game of Thrones, and then I would appreciate it more, huh? Because, you know, I watched probably 4 or 5, maybe 6 episodes, and it just didn't catch me. And so, you know, I'm not a huge television watcher in the first place. Huge video, so that, you know, it takes a lot to persuade me to dig into that. But maybe I'll give it another chance sometime. We'll see.
And look at the peasants and the people, and see the suffering and the torture and everything that they go through. Not just what the politics is, but look at the people. Look at how controlled they are. I mean, they can't even piss in a pot without somebody telling them that it's okay. So.
Oh, okay. I just like living in Oregon. Very good. Thank you.
Exactly.
You know, speaking of which, though, you know the one thing? I wanted to bring this up to you and ask this and pose this as a question to the Southern Oregon jury. You know, we're talking about how Oregon has us very tightly controlled when it comes to especially property rights and what you're allowed to do. But in some respects, you know how everybody's looking back and you're hearing all throughout the media, oh, it's been 5 years since COVID, right? Remember that? You're hearing all those stories right now. Aren't you seeing it ceaselessly within the mainstream right now, the 5th year anniversary of what of COVID and the pandemic and all the rest of it?
I think they're trying to keep COVID alive.
Well, I would certainly agree with you, certainly keeping that lockdown. But in many ways, as bad as Kate Brown was, we didn't have nearly the tyranny in the state of Oregon as many other states. I mean, we never had that situation going like what you had down in California with the cops going out there, and there's some fellow on a surfboard out in the middle, you know, in the waves and being arrested and charged. You know, we never had any of that kind of stuff like Newsom was giving his people. And as much of the neb-nosy bureaucrat mask mandates, and I think the worst part that Governor Brown did was the mask mandates in hospitals and the doctor's offices. I think that was through the Oregon Health Authority, if I recall correctly. I think that was kind of the worst of it. But as bad as Brown was a kitty cat compared to, I think, a lot of the other governors around this country.
Yeah, I agree. I think, you know, we definitely did not have as restrictive movements, the first couple of weeks, people were too afraid to even go out. They were afraid to see their families.
We were all frightened, I think, at that time. I remember, and this, of course, during the first Trump administration, near the end of that. And I remember when my boss ended up giving me a pass from the federal government because I'm an engineer and I'm on call and I have to go all sorts of places. I had a certificate that was going to permit me to be allowed to be out and to almost like a pass paper if they were, because you could tell that they were really concerned that they were really going to have to lock down things pretty tightly. And right. And I remember looking at that. I should have saved it. You know, I should have saved it because it would even have given me priority to purchase gasoline if it got to that point. They were that concerned when that first started rolling out here, Vicki. And I'll always remember that. But I think we kind of forget the amount of fear that everybody on both sides of the political aisle were thinking because of the unknown aspect of this all 5 years ago.
And I think, honestly, Bill, the kids were the ones that really suffered the worst. I mean,
oh, yeah.
Being yanked out of school, which, you know, at the time I understand, but the prolonged part of it, it really messed our kids up.
We have destroyed a generation of children when it came to their educational prospects, and even now we're still paying that price. Hey, appreciate the take on that, and thanks so much there. Really do. Vicki in the Applegate, it's 657. Pebble in your shoe Tuesday. Let me go to line three. Hi, good morning. This is Bill. Who's this?
Morning, Bill. Steve in Sunny Valley.
Hi, Steve. What are you thinking this morning? What's on your mind?
I'm thinking that Kate Brown wasn't as tyrannical if she didn't affect you. Now, I lost my job because I wouldn't take the jab. I was never afraid of it.
Oh, now I agree with you. That was a bad thing. All the survival. People that lost. So you're right, but I was right up against that. I was right up against the mandate. I was sitting there sweating bullets because I didn't take the jab, and I did not want to take the jab. And I know that our employer here was getting ready. Well, we're not exactly sure. They kind of took a light touch at that time. But remember when Biden was going to go in and do the jab mandate once he ended up taking office, it was really kind of touch and go. I thought quite realistically that I could have been fired during that time or maybe forced to work from home. I don't know.
Well, I was forced to work when everybody else was told to stay home because my job was indispensable. I was driving a stupid school bus, delivering school lunches to bus stops.
Yeah.
But as soon as that jab became available, if I didn't take it, I didn't have a job anymore.
Not much of a choice, was it?
If I lived in another state or if I worked for the Fed, I'd have been rehired with back pay. But because we have state-appointed governors, judges, nothing's going to get through the courts here.
That's a very good point, and that's one of the challenges when people will tell me, well, Bill, you know, this gun thing, Measure 114, and now the House Bill 3075, which I think had a hearing yesterday. Don't know what happened there at this point. I'm sure it was just bad. All you have to do is just do a class action suit and put it in the legal system. And as you know, Steve, we have judicial supremacy from the Democrats because almost every major judge of any import was appointed by a Democratic governor. They got the message. Right. They got the memo at the office. Okay?
The only solution is to move the borders.
Mm-hmm.
Get Salem and Portland out of the control of rural Oregon.
And that is looking like a better solution more and more over time. It's a high lift, though. In fact, I had to get I'm going to get him back on from Greater Idaho. That's looking better all the time, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. But, you know, my county didn't go for it. And I tell you, I'd much rather have Jefferson in Greater Idaho.
All right.
And the people in eastern Washington want to get away from Seattle, too. The people in the rural parts of the state are being stifled by the people who don't live here and don't have any skin in the game.
It's like a bad marriage. And, you know, if I can't have you, nobody will. That's really the way that the urban cities tend to look at it. And
so
if things go a little wild or a little sporty over the next few years, there may come a point, though, in which the rural lands will be able to pretty much let go of the larger state tyranny, and the larger state will not really be able to do much, or maybe might not even care. Hard to say.
Well, the only way to do that is to keep our local tax dollars local and then make the state beg for it. And right now, it goes to the state and the counties are begging for it.
Yeah, you beg for it to come back in the grants. You got it. Hey, thanks for that, Steve. Appreciate the call. It's a minute after 7. We'll catch up on the rest of Town Hall News here on KMED and KMED HD1 Eagle Point Medford, KBXG Grants Pass at 99.3 FM. Also have the Hannity update, and then Mike O'Neill from Landmark Legal. I've been really hot and bothered about the ability of a backbench judge in the federal system, you know, inferior courts, to be able to knock down executive action. It doesn't feel right. Doesn't feel like we have three co-equal branches of government. And Mike's a legal eagle from Landmark, and we'll just get together with him. What could be done about that, if anything?
The Outdoor Report is every